Everybody, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. No video streaming tonight, but stick around anyway. We have a fairly focused program tonight. Let me just say it right off the bat. I do not think that General Stanley McChrystal should be allowed to resign his commission at all. I think that whatever happens in an Oval Office meeting that's scheduled for tomorrow morning, when it's over, McChrystal should be told to go back to Afghanistan and finish the mission. I heard somewhere today that the issue is not Stanley McChrystal. The issue is who Stanley McChrystal is. He is a representative of a kind of warfare called counterinsurgency. That's the reason that Obama appointed him. Counterinsurgency, I think it should be clear at this point, doesn't work. It didn't work in Vietnam. It is not working in the occupied territories of Palestine. It has never worked any place. It is not working in Iraq. Counterinsurgency is a theory that says, well, you do the same kind of evil in the same kind of limited warfare tactics as the enemy, as someone that you are trying to occupy or someone whose country you're trying to overtake. It simply doesn't work. This is McChrystal's policy. I don't think Stanley McChrystal is a good human being. I think what he is, I'm not necessarily saying he's a bad human being. I think Stanley McChrystal, because of the nature of the kind of warfare he's been involved in, is simply an amoral human being. There is no morality with a man like Stanley McChrystal. There is simply war. That's all. And in war, as anyone who's ever served, I think, understands, and those who haven't, those who, like myself, have simply read about it or given at least lip service to studying it, in war, there really are no rules. Matter of fact, the first thing that goes out the window is the rule book. We have tried on occasion to civilize war. Think about that for a second, with the Geneva Conventions, with rules of engagement, and so on and so forth. War is murder and mayhem. That's all it is. In the history of warfare, usually the winner is determined by which commanding general gets his army to break more things and kill more people than the other guy. It's very simple. We've said it on this program a million times. War is not about nation building. War is not about installing a government friendly to us. War is not about overthrowing some foreign leader. War is not about counterinsurgency. What war is about is going into so-called enemy territory, killing anything that moves, blowing up every building that's standing, and when the smoke clears, declare yourself the winner, and that's it. Now, you can imagine what would happen if McChrystal were either A, fired, or B, Obama accepts his resignation, which would be the same thing. There would immediately be every single chicken hawk rat bastard on the political right in this country. Every single one of them, mostly those in media. Thugs and punks and draft dodgers like Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs would all of a sudden declare Stanley McChrystal some kind of a martyr, sacrificed on the altar of Barack Obama's inability to understand the military mind, inability to run his administration, inability to defeat the insurgents in Afghanistan. Nah, that's not the way to go. That's not the way to go at all. Barack Obama, for once, just once in his presidency, ought to realize that he is in a death struggle with the political right. And just jam this situation right into their war chicken hawk faces and refuse anything that McChrystal, if McChrystal tries to resign, no, sir, you got a contract. Don't ever talk like that again to a magazine reporter. I don't give a damn how you talk about me or Biden or anybody else in this government. But get your four-star ass back to Afghanistan, where you want to be. Go finish the war. Now get out of my Oval Office. That's the way it should be. Now, unless you've been at the bottom of a underwater cave today, you know all the details so far of what has happened. The Rolling Stone article. A great article. I read it online. The reporter who got this article, this should win some kind of a prize in journalism. I swear to God it should. And you've heard all of the all of the sidebars to the story, that the only reason the Rolling Stone writer got this story was because of the eruption of the volcano in Iceland, which caused all sorts of chaos in terms of flight patterns, aircraft, so on and so forth. And so the reporter got to spend an extraordinary amount of time with McChrystal. Ah, Lord. By the way, the Rolling Stone writer, he's not really employed by Rolling Stone. He's a freelancer, Michael Hastings. And as far as the comments that the excerpts that come from the article, they're all over the place now. The snotty remarks. I mean, these people around McChrystal sound like a bunch of punks. I swear to God they do. They just sound like a bunch of playground punks who operate in some little gang that hangs out in the corner of the playground. Team America, they call themselves. They're going to set the rules. Gates and Biden and Obama and the former Marine Commandant, all these military and non-military people in the civilian command and control just don't have a clue. And I will guarantee you that the people spouting off their mouths and acting like half-wits are probably colonels, lieutenant colonels, and a few majors who consider themselves inside the penumbra of the General Stanley McChrystal and therefore protected. Inside that bubble, as they say. Well, look what they've done. I would say send McChrystal back and let McChrystal clean the scum and the swine out of his inner circle. But Obama ought to tell him, look, pal, you got a job to do. Because here's the sad truth. Neither Obama nor McChrystal, there's no daylight between the two of them where it concerns the prosecution of this war that we shouldn't even be in. This is Obama's war now, and this is Obama's four-star general. Go for it, boys. You decided you wanted to do this, Mr. President, Mr. Four-Star General. Go for it. But you two are bound together like conjoined twins. Nah. Don't fire him, Mr. Obama, Mr. President, because your ass will be butchered by the political right in this country if you dare do it. And you are above and beyond everything else, Mr. President. You are a political animal. So, that's my 2 cents worth, Truth Seekers. If you've got an opinion, now's the time to call 877-996-2556. We'll be right back.
building up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. One quick email and into your phone. Phone calls. This is from Bob in Las Vegas, who is a podcast subscriber and Vietnam vet. Bob writes, "Mike, we have corresponded before, and you know me. I will just say this: this piece of slime general has led this president to commit more troops to this illegal and criminal war in Afghanistan, and now shows his contempt for not just our president, but for our constitution, our form of government." When I served in Vietnam at the highest level, I met slime like this guy, Westmoreland in particular. This guy should be fired. He should be executed, woo, for treason. But very few people know this mindset. I served at the very top, and when in Vietnam, we knew that if we ordered a stand down, we could possibly get into a Dr. Strangelove situation. We set up shadow commands that could come in a moment and take out the command structure. These generals are such egomaniacs and insane Fs. Oh, well, you know, Mike, so take this guy out now and get the F out of Afghanistan. Obama may not do either. Oh, well, man, keep it lit and you take care. Bob in Las Vegas. Chris is in Albuquerque, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I'm a speaker here.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I called also on the McChrystal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I agree with you
mm-hmm.
An awful lot of the time. I don't. I'm not sure that I agree with this business of let the whole thing go to hell and let the Democrats screw up and let the Republicans come in and they'll show just how bad it can get.
Right.
And maybe that would get everybody up off their dead ass. But, it's not entirely without merit,
mm-hmm.
and it might be the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's going to happen, there's going to be a period where the right wing could go even a little, they're not a little nutty. They're a nut farm. But they could get even worse than they are. And one of the things that makes me feel a little better and even maybe a little safer is the business of civilian control of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And to a great extent, that has held up. I'm not sure if they brought back Posse Comitatus or not. But I think they have brought it back. By firing this guy, the way that I think that Bush or Bush, that Obama ought to do it is, they ought to go out on the porch where they do news announcements and in front of the cameras and everything, and Obama should say that you did this, you did that, you did this, you're fired, and then kick his ass right off the porch.
Chris, you make some good points. I don't have any, thanks, Chris. I don't have any problem with, none whatsoever, with the idea of civilian control up the chain of command at the very top of the pyramid of the command and control structure in this country is, our civilians. That's the way it has to be. That's the way it was set up. And, that's the way it must be. However, I think one thing that we need to keep in mind here, I've heard a lot of comparisons today between what happened with Truman and MacArthur and what is happening between Obama and McChrystal. And I've heard a couple of commentators, but not a whole lot, bring up the truth of that. And the truth of that is that Truman and MacArthur had a difference in strategy. MacArthur wanted to drop nuclear bombs on China. And Truman said no. Consequently, Truman had to fire him because MacArthur stepped out of the chain of command to make that declaration. McChrystal and Obama have exactly the same idea where it concerns Afghanistan. This is Obama's war now. Sure, it went on for 8 years before he ever took office. He could have ended it. He chose not to. Obama chose to continue the war, and he picked McChrystal to prosecute it for him. So there is no argument on tactics or strategy. McChrystal was given almost carte blanche to do whatever he wanted to do. That's what counterinsurgency is. No questions asked. Just bring me the bodies. Now, I disagree. There is no challenge to the chain of command here. If these dweebs around McChrystal want to make remarks and want to quote their boss disparaging remarks about members of the national security team, so what? So what? This is McChrystal and Obama's war.
Scream, you suppress, embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Roz writes, Mike, I was listening to your reasons as to why McChrystal should be kept on, and well, I guess you have a good point there. I reacted hastily to my wish to see him gone. I think the reason for that is his personality, as you say, an army man, hard and brash. I always fear that type. I always fear that types like him would overlook collateral damage, the killing of innocents by his men, and sweep it all under the rug. I think it could be too, I think he could be too hardened to the taking of life now. I guess I was put off by that thought at the back of my mind, Roz. Yeah, no, I understand that. I don't think McChrystal, I don't know. I'm just guessing. I have no idea about this guy except the little bit I know about his military career up to the point where Obama selected him and joined hands with him to wage this filthy war in Afghanistan. And from what I understand about McChrystal, he had no problem. He, like so many of these military types, like Colonel Kurtz, no problem in collateral damage. That's just with other people dying. That's part of war. Remember what war is. I mean, the United States, did it have any problem where it concerns collateral damage when we firebombed at Dresden? Was there any problem when we nuked two Japanese cities? And the revisionists, history revisionists want us to believe that, it was either that, Malloy, or we would have lost 1 million men invading Japan. My reading of history says that Japan was ready to surrender. Harry Truman decided to go ahead and nuke them anyway. So the idea that war is some neat little package where the only people that get killed are the bad guys. And who designates the bad guys? I mean, who is it that makes these decisions on who the bad guys are? You see, the world, for the most part, has decided, Muslim world, the non-Arab world, has decided that the Palestinians are the bad guys where it concerns the Israelis and Palestinians. Really? The U.S. government and NATO or somebody has decided that the Taliban are the bad guys in Afghanistan. Are they bad people? By our standards, they are. Of course. Take a look at how the women of that country are forced to dress or be flogged and beaten. Tom in Joshua Tree writes, Mike, here's what I think about it. Change the mission in Afghanistan. Let McChrystal kill all the mullahs he wants. Then have him disarm the entire country. That'll be his toy soldier macho crap detail. Then put women in charge of everything. Send all the kids to school for one or two generations and set up an economy that enriches all with equity and justice. And he adds another paragraph here, but doesn't have to do with Afghanistan. So I think so many of us in this country have this knee-jerk reaction that because McChrystal seems to have challenged the civilian power structure, he should be fired. But he didn't challenge the civilian power structure. From the Rolling Stone article, this quote. Then, unable to help themselves, he and his staff imagined the general dismissing the vice president with a good one-liner. Are you asking about Vice President Biden? McChrystal says with a laugh. Who's that? Who's Biden? Suggested top advisor. Did you say, bite me? That's because McChrystal had dismissed the counterterrorism strategy being advocated by Vice President Joe Biden as short-sighted, saying it would lead to a state of chaosistan. In private, here's another one. In private, Team McChrystal likes to talk crap about many of Obama's top people on the diplomatic side. One aide calls Jim Jones, retired four-star general and veteran of the Cold War, a clown. Who remained stuck in 1985. Okay. They go on. Politicians like McCain and Kerry, says another aide, quote, turn up, have a meeting with Afghan President Hamid Karzai, criticize him at the airport press conference, then get back to the U.S. for the Sunday talk shows. Frankly, it's not very helpful. And oddly, this. Only Secretary of State Hillary Clinton receives good reviews from McChrystal's inner circle. An advisor says, quote, Hillary had Stan's back during the strategic review. She said, if Stan wants it, give him what he needs, end quote. Well, of course, Hillary Clinton is as much of a warmonger as her husband was. Hillary Clinton is part of that foreign policy military combine that has been running this country since when? Since Kennedy was assassinated. Kennedy was part of it. Just Kennedy went the wrong direction. So the military decided to off him. Or somebody decided it. But come on, folks. You know, we can debate this until hell freezes over. But let's not pretend here that Barack Obama is this man, this civilian president desperately seeking peace. And he has an out of control warmongering general who is desperately seeking war. And because of that rift and because of the conversations going on in the general's inner circle, that he should be fired. That's not the case. That's not the situation. What did Obama call this? Didn't he call it a good war when he was running for president? Are you kidding me? Every single civilian death splatters blood, not just on McChrystal, but also on Obama. Come on, get real. This has nothing to do with the filthy, phony, jerky, chicken hawk criticism of Obama that you're going to get from Limbaugh and his little parrot Hannity or the rest of these thugs. This is Obama's war. Who in the hell's war do you think it is? And who did Obama select to prosecute it? He didn't rehire any of the generals that were fired by Bush because these various generals disagreed publicly with Bush. What did Bush do? He fired him. So what's Obama? Obama probably, there's a good chance he will fire him. But let's not delude ourselves into thinking, please, come on, y'all, you're smarter than that. Don't delude yourself into thinking there's some great big policy difference between Obama and McChrystal. There isn't. The only difference between them is Obama sits back in Washington. McChrystal sits in Kandahar or wherever, but they have the same goal. The defeat of the Taliban, the pacification of Afghanistan, to make it safe for corporate America. Come on! Fire him? Because he and his boys sit around and drink beer and get smart-assy with their language about people back in D.C.? Oh, really? Look. So many of these military commanders, they are not in combat roles. They're in a combat zone, but they're not in combat roles. And it's a clubhouse. This is a boys' clubhouse. They don't want no gays around. They don't want no chicks around. Unless it's, you know, for service. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They don't want no civilians around. They don't want no peace creeps around. They don't want no diplomats around. This is war, goddammit. And it should be fought by men like us. Right? Right. That's all I'm saying. You know, I listened to this stuff all day today. All these, I mean, everybody, the White House press corps just mouth breathing, practically blowing spittle all over Robert Gibbs, and Gibbs standing there like this wise old frog sitting at the press briefing today. Well, you know, I don't, we'll have this big conference. You know, and all these, I'll tell you one that really pissed me off was, Barry McCaffrey. Former four-star general who's in the military procurement business. He's either a lobbyist or on a board of directors of weapons manufacturers. And every time MSNBC or CNN wants a former four-star general, they bring this guy in. And what were his comments today? Well, you know, this is certainly outside the realm of general. Oh, give me a break. You know what Obama ought to do, in my opinion? Not that you give a damn. You ought to take a look at the situation and say, you know what? 4,000 years of history have proved that this kind of a conflict in this part of the world is unwinnable. We're leaving. McChrystal, go back, pull your troops. We're going home. That would be a leader. But that's not going to happen, and you know it as well as I do, because boys will be boys, and they've got to pursue this. They've got to continue this war, and the reason they continue it is not for guts and glory. It's for corporate America. Come on, Truth Seeker, you know that. We'll be right back. In the crowd.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
About 9 before the hour. A couple of emails here regarding this issue from Sand. I heard a soundbite today in which Obama was stating that he did not know what kind of action he would take about what McChrystal said in Rolling Stone. He said he had to talk to him. And then, as if someone had pulled a talking doll string, he said he wanted everyone to know that we were in Afghanistan to get Al-Qaeda and nothing will change then. Nothing will change. Then on to, quote, our brave men and women there, end quote, yada, yada, yada. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, is this man thinking? Or is he even thinking anymore? Is he just trying to survive politically or literally survive an assassination if he disobeys the master's war? Possibility, huh? And Michael writes, the situation with McChrystal and Obama is much more like that which Kennedy walked into in 1961. After 8 years of Bush and Cheney and the Pentagon getting pretty much whatever it wanted, not to mention Clinton's experience in prior years, I'd bet that the situation right now is much like what met Kennedy when he first entered office. Eisenhower had pretty much let the Pentagon get completely out of control. The brass then were, after all, his subordinates during World War II, and he trusted them and left them to their own devices. And when Kennedy arrived, the Joint Chiefs Office was a rat's nest of birchers and right-wing wackos. Kennedy did the best he could to make changes without too much drama. His most visible act was relieving Edwin Walker of his European command for insubordination, and Lemnitzer was rather quietly shunted off to NATO. What must also be remembered in this context is that most of these top brass today were handpicked by Rumsfeld, and the doubters and the truth-tellers, like generals like Zinni and Taguba, were weeded out because they weren't sufficiently loyal to the neoconservatives. And McChrystal showed his loyalty to the Bush White House and the Pentagon civilians by covering up the Pat Tillman disaster and by creating a cover story that made the Bush White House and the Pentagon look good. For that, he was promoted a week after the reports of Tillman's death. This is more visible than General Walker's transgressions, and it's the second time that McChrystal has put Obama in a tight spot with public remarks. If Obama doesn't fire him or doesn't let him resign, my guess is that McChrystal and the rest of the Pentagon brass will think he's won. And you can bet that McChrystal will end up even further off the reservation in the days ahead. Michael in Roswell. BC is driving through PA. Hey, BC.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, we turned the speakerphone off. Hold on.
Okay.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
Man, you had me laughing so hard.
Yeah?
I'm glad you took that break. I was laughing so hard that last segment.
Yeah.
And when I talked to your wife, yep. I could not stop laughing.
Yeah?
I couldn't. Because the reason why is because you're just, I mean... I heard the whole thing today. I only heard one talk show, Mark Thompson, those serious left, and he was talking about, I heard people call in, talk about, you know, chain of command. And I'm not going to lie, I was on the bandwagon, like,
uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, he disrespected the president. And I was so anxious to hear your show tonight. You totally went the opposite direction. And you're so right. You're right. It's like, this is President Obama's war. He hired this guy, so what? He's on the bus drinking a bunch of beer with a bunch of guys. That's what he's supposed to do. He's hired for that job. You're on point tonight, my brother.
Well,
you're on point. I mean, I did not expect you to say that at all tonight. I thought you were just going to follow in line.
Well,
I thought you were going to just follow in line. Yep. Gosh, retired, and you know, you did say it's the chain of command. What he did was wrong, you know, but he was hired at the job, chew his butt back, get his ass back to Afghanistan. You are correct. If anybody don't like it, it's the truth. You're right, brother.
Well, I appreciate your comments, BC. I don't know, and thanks a lot, man. Drive safe. I don't, you know, in the big context of things. I'm always nervous when somebody says, I mean, I appreciate it, BC. Thank you. But I'm always nervous when somebody says you're right. That's correct. Because I never know if I am. I'm just talking about how I feel about this. And I have such strong, feelings against what we're doing. And just like Michael's email said, well, you know, Obama inherited this mess and so on and so forth. And I guess there are some similarities to what Kennedy walked into, and look what happened to Kennedy. And there's nobody on earth that will ever convince me. I don't care. You can be credentialed from hell to breakfast, but no one will ever convince me that Lee Harvey Oswald got it in his head to go assassinate a president of the United States, and that's the end of it. No, sir, ain't no way. I do honestly believe that the military-industrial establishment decided to kill the president, and they succeeded. So, you know, Michael may be right. As far as BC, yeah, I mean, we can agree. We can agree that taking the approach that I took tonight is the one that, you know, on a lot of levels makes sense. I mean, Obama had a chance. Sure, he might fear for his life. But when he was a candidate, he was talking about this. It's not like he got elected. It's not like he was talking peace in our time and then he got elected. He never said peace in our time. He never said any of that. Obama is not, he doesn't walk on water. He's not a liberal. He's not, he's barely progressive on certain issues. Well, you know, which is not to condemn him. He fits right in. He's a center-right president. Just like Clinton. Just like so many of them. But this is his war. This is his general. He's made the decision. He's decided. He and Hillary Clinton have decided. And McChrystal, this is how we're going to do it. Okay, if you make that decision, when it gets crazy like this, you can't say, get back to Washington so I can fire you. The hour. This is the Malloy program. We're talking about the outrage du jour, the dust up between who? There really is no dust up, is there? Unless it's between Rolling Stone magazine and the power structure in this country. I don't know. Back to your calls, and then I want to share something with you that Ray McGovern has written. Chuck is in Knoxville, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
All right.
To me, this is, first of all, this is not the first time he's had issues with McChrystal. There have been two or three different incidents in the past.
Right.
To me, this is very similar to the Patton situation. The only difference is instead of slapping a soldier, he verbally slapped the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Accordingly, I think he should do exactly what Patton had to do. I think he should have to apologize. I think he should have to apologize to the nation as a whole for being not only insubordinate, but not conducting himself in the manner expected of a four-star general.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a strong argument, and I don't disagree with that. I just don't think that he should be fired. And the reason I don't think is what I said, because McChrystal's policy is based on Obama's policy. All McChrystal is doing, unless I'm completely wrong, which I may be, but it's my understanding, all McChrystal is doing is carrying out the policy of the Obama administration. Obama talked about this before he became president. This is not a surprise.
Well, to say that McChrystal was Obama's choice is oversimplifying the situation.
Well, it may be. It may be.
It may be that he did pick him. I tend to doubt it. I tend to think that he was pushed on him, just like Karzai is a puppet, just like Musharraf is a puppet, the rest of them. Anybody that has anything to do with the upper echelon of the power structure is pretty much placed in there by the powers that be rather than by the president that I can see.
Well, if that is the case, and you may be exactly right, shouldn't Obama have resisted turning this over to McChrystal and giving him a fourth star back when all this came up? When did this come up? A year and a half ago? When?
He may very well have, but that doesn't mean he won the power struggle over it. Very often, if you're in a situation like Obama's in, you're gonna pick your battles very carefully. That may have been a battle that he was willing to give up. But, you know, as far as McChrystal is concerned, this is completely unacceptable. You cannot have a power structure where the number two man in the power structure is questioning the number one man. I mean, the number one man has the right to change his mind regardless as quickly as he wants, and it's the number two man's job to carry that decision out. And as far as I can see, McChrystal's offered no apology for his loose mouth. That, to me, connotes an attitude problem.
Well, no. In fact, he has apologized profusely to just...
Oh, has he?
Yeah,
okay,
I'm sorry. Just to damn near everybody. I mean, he's even apologizing to John Kerry and John McCain.
Did he apologize to the president?
I think so. I don't think he came out and said, "Dear Mr. President, I really shot my mouth off, or my people did, therefore I apologize." But I think he has made some individual apologies and a blanket apology. I'm not sure where it concerns whether or not he's specifically apologized to Obama.
I still think the onus should be on him. The decision should be his. He can either officially apologize to the nation as a whole, or he can quit or be fired.
Well, you know. Yeah, that. Well, you know, your position is it's a strong one, Chuck, and I appreciate you checking in. All right.
Okay.
All right, man.
Okay.
Take care. Take care. I certainly agree with the tradition in this country that is absolutely necessary, has been necessary for 200 some years, and that is civilian control of the military. Although, you know, when you stop and think about it, there have been a lot of decisions made by civilian war makers. Robert McNamara comes to mind very quickly. They cost an awful lot of American lives, not to mention the lives of the people whose countries we invaded. But when I think about the alliance between Robert McNamara and General William Westmoreland, holy Toledo. So there, chain of command is very important. Civilian control is very important. But there have been military commanders, and George Bush fired four or five of them when he was president. Or, you know, he didn't come out and say, "I fired this guy," but they were forced into retirement or relieved of their command, which is the same thing. Generals who disagreed with the strategy, with the tactics. How many American generals... And I grant you, a couple of them were Pentagon generals, but a couple of them had adequate combat experience who disagreed with the idea of diverting American troops and energy into Iraq at a critical time in the prosecution of the war in Afghanistan. Don't forget, the war in Afghanistan started in what, 2001? What is it now? 2010? We're coming up on the ninth anniversary. And, you know, I've got all kinds of mixed feelings about this. Civilian leadership, in theory, has to make the decision because the nation is going to have to support the war. When was the last time we had a war that the nation supported? What did George Bush tell people to do? Go shopping. after the attack on the Trade Center that resulted in our invasion of Afghanistan. Who has borne the brunt of this war? The military families. There is no effort in this country to support what's going on in Afghanistan or Iraq. There isn't support for this bloodbath in Afghanistan. Is what? I don't think it's in single digits, but it's damn sure in low double digits. The American people realize, I think, maybe some of us realize what a drain this is. Billions, trillions. The Iraq war is up to what? $3 trillion now? Jesus God. And the war in Afghanistan is going to be the nail in the coffin here for the United States. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we have to lose it all where it concerns this idea of American empire. The Brits had to. The British had to. Lose everything. This is madness. So, yeah, chain of command, sure. But... And civilian control of the military, of course. But my God, when you have a civilian leadership and a military leadership who, as in this case, who seem to be on the same place, on the same page regarding this horror, we are not going to succeed in Afghanistan. I mean, go back to Alexander the Great. He didn't succeed. The Russians didn't. The British didn't. We're not going to either. So it's not a question of whether or not we leave. It's a question of when do we leave and with how much blood on the ground in Afghanistan. That is Obama's decision, not McChrystal's. So I agree with everybody who's saying, well, you know, come on, Malloy, chain of command, civilian control. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we're going to lose this one, just like we lost in Vietnam. And it's just a question of how many Americans and Afghans have to die before the goddamn point is made.
Mike Malloy.
Time for retribution. Here comes the revolution. Time for retribution.
It's about 22 past the hour. A couple emails here, then back to your calls. From Cat Mary in Memphis, who is disgusted with all of it. Cat Mary writes, according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, McChrystal isn't allowed to criticize the president, the vice president, or Congress. Therefore, he's lucky if allowed to resign. Otherwise, he'd face a court-martial and whatever penalties imposed, including loss of pension. There ain't no such thing as free speech in the military. I still think we should be out of Afghanistan, out of Iraq, and not into Iran, although that appears to be imminent. Cap Mary from Gordon in Oklahoma City. Mike, I agree in principle with your statements concerning McChrystal. The only thing I may do differently is to lock McChrystal and Rahm Emanuel in a room with a gallon of Mad Dog 2020. That should solve two problems at once. As far as civilians being in charge of the military, well, that could be considered the good news, I suppose. The bad news is the civilians in charge of the military are called the military-industrial complex. Gordon in Oklahoma City. That's a good point. Trevor, regarding McChrystal, Mike, President should not fire him. This is a ploy by McChrystal to hide his failure to win this war. This is his own exit strategy. He and his aides knew the reporter was going to publish the story, and it would cause an uproar and would force Obama to fire him. Then they can sit back and blame Obama for losing the war, a war that McChrystal could not win. Send it back to Afghanistan to face the music. Then in 2011, get us out as planned. Don't give the general a way out. Trevor. And Darren in North Carolina, Mike, thanks so much for pointing out a very important fact. Obama is not a liberal. The stimulus was far from liberal. Most economists agreed it wasn't enough. The health care bill was far from liberal. He's been far from liberal regarding the so-called war on terror. Gitmo is still open. Indefinite detention is still in place. Wiretaps are still in place. He certainly isn't liberal on taxation, as a huge majority of Americans got tax cuts since he has been in office. He is for the death penalty. He's against gay marriage. Hell, the man is for offshore drilling. I'm not a basher. I voted for the man and will do so again. But when the right or some on the left call Obama a liberal, I have to laugh out loud. Darren in North Carolina. Yeah, that's the truth. The only people who call Obama a liberal are these half-witted morons on the political right in this country, whether they're in media or in Congress or wandering around bugging talk show hosts, you know, with their inane phone calls and so on and so forth. And I think anyone who calls Obama a liberal shows that they have no idea what the hell they're talking about. Nothing. They're following what the swine in right-wing media in this country tells them to think. Anyone who uses their own brain and can think clearly, you know, you ask them, well, what makes Obama liberal? There's no answer. They come up with some kind of horse hockey that, well, he tried to bail out the banks. What? But that's not liberal, you moron. Well, he took over General Motors. But that's not liberal, you moron. My God, I get sick of these right-wing trolls. I really do. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm calling to talk about Pat Tillman.
Okay.
Evidently, I have friends in the military who claim he wasn't killed in a friendly fire incident whatsoever. He rolled his Humvee into a ditch, to say, and he ended up getting killed that way. They claim that it was a military propaganda scheme to take this ex-NFL footballer who left his contract behind to join the military after 9/11 to remote the army and not make it look like an accident.
Well, I guess unless somebody was there, you know, there's several stories or opinions about how Tillman died, but we do know he did not die in combat, and that's what the military, under the direction of McChrystal, ordered the story to be spun. So regardless whether it was an accident or friendly fire or suicide, doesn't make any difference. The lie is still in place, or it was in place until the lie was found out.
Exactly. I was just trying to clarify that. But, yeah, he definitely didn't die in a friendly fire incident. No weapons involved.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jeremy. Like I say, I have no idea. And Jeremy may be completely right. People who claim to have been on the scene say that he was actually shot and killed by friendly fire. All right, we'll be back after this break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
That's the spirit of the USA.
There's a spirit of achievement all around. Where are
no more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, you should know who Ray McGovern is. He served as an Army infantry intelligence officer in the early 60s and then worked as a CIA analyst for the next 27 years. He is now a member of the Standing Group, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. This is what he writes. Journalist Michael Hastings has given Rolling Stone magazine a graphic account of the arrogance, disarray, and ineptitude that distinguish what passes for President Barack Obama's policy on Afghanistan. For those of us with some gray in our hair, the fiasco is infuriatingly reminiscent of Vietnam. In blowing off steam to Hastings, NATO U.S. Commander General Stanley McChrystal and his top aides seem to have decided that at this low point in the Afghanistan quagmire, political offense is the best defense for a military strategy sinking from waist to neck deep. In interviews with Hastings, McChrystal and his team direct mockery at many senior-level officials in the Obama administration. For instance, one of McChrystal's aides refers to Obama's national security advisor, James L. Jones, as a clown. Members of McChrystal's inner circle also quote the general as saying he was, quote, pretty disappointed, end quote, with an Oval Office meeting and describing Obama as, quote, intimidated, end quote, by McChrystal and other generals. Commenting on the controversy today, Obama said McChrystal and his team had shown poor judgment. But the president added that he wanted to speak with McChrystal directly before making any decision on firing him. Two administration officials who are spared harsh criticism from McChrystal's team are Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who were considered key supporters of McChrystal's insistence last year that Obama boost U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan to about 100,000. In praise for Clinton, one of McChrystal's entourage told writer Hastings, quote, Hillary's head stands back during the last fall's strategic review. Another aide added, she said if Stan wants it, give him what he needs. As for Gates, McChrystal spared his boss from criticism, perhaps still expecting support from the chameleon-like Pentagon chief who will first want to check the surrounding foliage before selecting the best camouflage color. However, in a statement on Tuesday, Gates said McChrystal had committed, quote, a significant mistake, end quote, in the handling of the Rolling Stone interviews. In Hastings' exposure of the backbiting over policy in Afghanistan, the bottom line is best articulated by a predicate adjective beginning with the letter F and ending with ucked up. Some variation of that vulgarism is used repeatedly by the macho McChrystal and his pseudo-macho staffers, whom Hastings interviewed at length. Hastings' copious notes make it seem as if everyone but McChrystal and his merry men are responsible for the fecklessness on Afghanistan. But their comments also betray a realization that their particular brand of can-do, cut-and-paste counterinsurgency has brought what Thomas Henry Huxley defined as tragedy, namely, quote, the slaying of a beautiful hypothesis by an ugly fact, end quote. McChrystal and his supporters have failed miserably, and they know it. But they lack any measure of being gracious or honest in defeat. Worse still for McChrystal is the fact that his arch rival, retired Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry, now ambassador to Afghanistan, has been proven correct beyond reasonable doubt, so to speak, in challenging McChrystal's adolescent views regarding how to turn the Afghan mess around. Last year, Eikenberry told Obama that McChrystal's whiz-bang counterinsurgency strategy was nonsense and that Obama should look beyond a military solution. Anyone with a modicum of experience can now see that it was Eikenberry who had it right during last year's policy review. The text of two cables he sent to Washington in early November were published in the New York Times. The Rolling Stone article is also strike two for McChrystal's insubordination. His first strike came last fall, when his recommendation for 40,000 additional troops was leaked to the press. He also publicly dismissed a more targeted approach toward attacking al-Qaeda terrorists, reportedly advocated by Vice President Joe Biden. The leak of McChrystal's recommendation came well before Obama had decided on a course of action. But the timely disclosure cornered the president, who didn't dare push back against his generals and remind them about the U.S. principle of civilian control of the military. In an ironic twist, since the leak of his memo cornered Obama on the Afghan surge, McChrystal complained to the Rolling Stones' Hastings that he felt betrayed by the leak of Ambassador Eikenberry's cables to Washington. The general said, quote, "Here's one that covers his flank for the history books. Now if we fail, they can say, I told you so," end quote. Does that not suggest that McChrystal is fearful of failure and of taking the blame? What is clear is that there is not enough room in Kabul for both McChrystal and Eikenberry. One of them has to be given his marching orders, and I would not rule out the possibility it will be Eikenberry. This would be bereft of all logic. Rather, it would be testament to Obama's fear of McChrystal, not to mention the president's apparent inability to understand that Afghanistan amounts to Vietnam Redux. As for how McChrystal's inner circle views Vice President Biden, the Rolling Stone article quotes a joke in which McChrystal mentions Biden's name, and one of the general's top advisors replies, "Did you say bite me?" After publication of the Rolling Stone article, some pundits are predicting McChrystal will be fired, as he should have been last fall. The general is now back in Washington to face the music. Reportedly, he has prepared a letter of resignation. But Obama might prefer a well-orchestrated minuet with the general rather than a requiem. Maybe McChrystal is even expecting a chorus of, "He's a jolly good fellow," from the intimidated president. That's not how it's always been. When General Douglas MacArthur issued an unauthorized statement containing a veiled threat to expand the Korean War to China, at a time when Truman was preparing to enter peace negotiations with North Korea and China, MacArthur was fired in place. One strike, and MacArthur was out, because Truman could take the heat. In contrast, Obama has shown himself to be an accommodating fellow on issue after issue. It seems far from certain he would fire the White House groundskeeper, even if caught urinating on the flowers in full view of summer tourists. Little can account for Obama's promotion of McChrystal to his current post, except for a strange blend of cowardice tinged with ignorance. McChrystal had been Vice President Dick Cheney's right-hand man in running Special Forces hit squad assassins and torturers in Iraq. For these endeavors, McChrystal has accumulated a fearsome following of what might be called the worst of the worst among both the U.S. military and Blackwater-style mercenaries. Here is writer Hastings on McChrystal's entourage. Quote, "The general staff is a hand-picked collection of killers, spies, geniuses, patriots, political operators, and outright maniacs. There's a former head of British Special Forces, two Navy SEALs, an Afghan Special Forces commando, a lawyer, two fighter pilots, and at least two dozen combat veterans and counterinsurgency experts. They pride themselves on their can-do attitude and their disdain for authority." For good measure, Hastings adds a troubling vignette. Someone apparently called his attention to what Hastings calls, quote, "a piece of suspense fiction," end quote, written by McChrystal for the literary magazine at West Point while he was studying there. Hastings includes a description of the short story. Quote, "The unnamed narrator appears to be trying to stop a plot to assassinate the president. It turns out, however, that the narrator himself is the assassin, and he's able to infiltrate the White House." The president strode in smiling. From the right coat pocket of the raincoat I carried, I slowly drew forth my .32 caliber pistol. I had succeeded. To be on the safe side, though, Obama may wish to put on a bulletproof vest before he meets with McChrystal on Wednesday. Obama might be forgiven for fearing for his own personal safety, particularly if he has read James Douglas's book, JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. Kennedy inherited a senior military that then Undersecretary of State George Ball called a, quote, "sewer of deceit," end quote. They lacked confidence in Kennedy's steadfastness before the menace of communism and salivated over how to maneuver the young president into military confrontations. These included operations to provoke war with Cuba, the Soviet Union, China, North Vietnam, you name it. The senior military and the CIA bitterly resented Kennedy's adamant refusal to be mousetrapped into ordering U.S. troops to rescue those Cuban counter-revolutionaries marooned on the beach of the Bay of Pigs and send in U.S. troops to get rid of Fidel Castro once and for all. A lesser-known challenge to Kennedy came in early March 1962 when Joint Chief of Staff Chairman General Lyman Lemnitzer proposed a plan called Operation Northwoods to justify U.S. invasion of Cuba. Working from declassified documents for his book Body of Secrets, James Bamford gave the following concise description. Quote, Operation Northwoods, which had the written approval of the chairman and every member of the Joint Chiefs, called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for boats carrying refugees fleeing Cuba to be sunk on the high seas, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., Miami, and elsewhere. People would be framed for bombings they did not commit. Planes would be hijacked. Using phony evidence, all of it would be blamed on Castro, thus giving General Lemnitzer and his cabal the excuse, as well as the public and international backing, they needed to launch their war. End quote. More when we come back.
To the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century.
Is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So, as Roy McGovern is writing here, Operation Northwoods, which was a plot to fly airplanes into buildings in the United States, assassinate people on the street, blow up Cuban refugee boats, and blame it all on Castro, was a plan that Kennedy rejected. Back to what McGovern wrote today. Kennedy rebuffed the Joint Chiefs, creating still more bad blood that eventually would help seal his fate, in my opinion. In his book, James Douglas lists some of the other grievances held against the young president by the super patriot Joint Chiefs of Staff, who thought of themselves as self-appointed authentic guardians of the United States against the communist threat, not the Constitution they took an oath to defend if it got in the way. During the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962, the top military were aghast at Kennedy's unwillingness to risk war with the Soviet Union by invading Cuba. After Kennedy and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev found a way to stop at the brink of nuclear catastrophe, both saw more clearly than ever a mutual interest in preventing another such occurrence. This led to a sustained back-channel dialogue from which the Joint Chiefs were excluded, and of which they were highly distrustful. The kiss of death, literally, I am persuaded, came when Kennedy ordered the withdrawal of 1,000 U.S. troops from Vietnam by the end of 63, and the bulk of the rest of them by 1965. To the senior military, that was proof positive that Kennedy was soft on communism, which, if you can believe it, was an even more heinous offense in those days than being soft on terrorism is today. President Lyndon Johnson knew no better than to let himself become captive to the same military leaders, the more so since he was determined not to be the first U.S. president to lose a war. They assured him the war in Vietnam, the counterinsurgency, could be won. And they were sure they knew best how to do that. As a result, young Army infantry officers like me were required to educate ourselves on the writings of Che Guevara and Mao Zedong, but alas, not those of the more profound military strategist Sun Tzu from 2.5 millennia earlier. There was a conventional side to the Vietnam War as well, and conventional provocations. A prime example is the U.S. military-provoked incident in the Gulf of Tonkin of August 2, 1964. Under severe pressure from the Joint Chiefs and other senior military, President Lyndon Johnson ordered Defense Secretary Robert, we were wrong, terribly wrong, McNamara, to use the faux incident to deceive Congress into approving the fateful Tonkin Gulf resolution to justify 7 years of additional war against the Vietnamese communists. William Fulbright, then chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, later said that the thing he regretted most during his tenure was letting himself be snowed by the military into pushing for approval of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. And George Ball added, quote, there's no question that many of the people who were associated with the war were looking for any excuse to initiate bombing North Vietnam. The sending of a destroyer up the Tonkin Gulf was primarily for provocation. Pentagon Papers truth-teller Daniel Ellsberg, of all people, has said that President Lyndon Johnson has not been given enough credit. For what, you might ask? Well, Johnson let himself be persuaded by the military, but only up to a point. In a talk on the 30th anniversary of the publication of the Pentagon Papers, Ellsberg said he was convinced that Johnson and McNamara came to see their main task as protecting the country from the outlandish proposals urged on them by senior U.S. military officials. Proposals fraught with the danger of widened war with China, perhaps even involving the use of nuclear weapons. According to Ellsberg, Johnson saw a need to give the Joint Chiefs just enough to satisfy them to the point where they would not resign and go public with their proposals for escalating and, quote, winning, unquote, the war. It was a difficult tightrope to walk. Johnson and McNamara lived in fear that the majority of Americans could be persuaded by arguments the administration knew to be dangerously crazy. More sober and experienced advisors like George Ball, Vice President Humphrey, and Assistant Secretary of State William Bundy were advising the president simply to get out of Vietnam. Ellsberg indicated that this option was not even seriously considered by Johnson at the time. Rather, priority was given to a middle course, providing the military with just enough to keep them quiet. Am I suggesting that Barack Obama now faces a similar situation with respect to Afghanistan? I am. And I would cite the fawning adulation given General David Petraeus, head of Central Command, last week during his congressional testimony as, well, testimony to that. Obama's Afghan dilemma is this. Although the escalation that McChrystal demanded is in shambles, the general cannot be expected to leave quietly, nor with any graceful acknowledgement that he was wrong. If he agrees to quit, and he and Petraeus blame the U.S. defeat on everyone but themselves, there will be considerable resonance. As the midterm elections loom in November, Obama and his Democratic colleagues do not want to have to contend with charges of being soft on communism. Oh, sorry. I mean terrorism. It's the same dynamic Johnson and Humphrey faced and were foiled by. So hold on to your hats. McChrystal has given the president the unexpected opportunity to change course and leave behind the fool's errand called Afghanistan. But the general also has thrown down the gauntlet. I wish I were more confident that the president has the backbone to face into this critical challenge with some courage. Ray McGovern. That pretty much says it all for me, right? We're going to take a break. We will come back after the break and take more of your phone calls. You know, for people over a certain age, this is the part that's very frustrating to me. People over a certain age, and I don't mean old people. We've seen this before. We know this. And you don't have to be over a certain age. All you have to do is understand history in this country. And you don't have to go back far. Go back to the election of Kennedy. Start there. And McGovern was there. I was there. A lot of people were there. And we know what happened. And here it is again. That's the part that is so frustrating, to watch every single generation have to learn the same damn lesson over and over and over again. Only every time we learn it, it gets more dangerous and more dangerous and more dangerous. Until one time, you know what's going to happen? In trying to learn the lesson, we're going to end everything. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We're talking about the Obama-McChrystal situation and issues tangential to the situation. They are meeting tomorrow. McChrystal has been called home for face-to-face with the president. And speculation, including here, is, you know, all over the place about what's going to happen with this meeting tomorrow. Let's get a few phone calls in here. Mike is in Chicago listening on Sirius. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
Pretty good.
To give you an idea, Hannity's already spinning this as Obama's not tough on North Korea or China, but when he decides to get tough, one goes after one of our patriotic generals. And, you know, it's just like Fox Studio, and he's telling this to Oliver North, too. Fox Studio should just wrap the building in barbed wire because it's pretty much a prison between Oliver North, G. Gordon Liddy, Karl Rove.
Oh. Sarah Palin.
Yeah, as of last year, Greta Van Susteren had Henry Kissinger as a commentator.
Oh, sure.
Well, like, what would he do in Afghanistan? I'm like, well, the place would be ash if it was up to him,
that's,
you know?
That's very true. You know, this is part of the anti-American group that is determined to bring the country down, and so far they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad. And then when they talk about, you know, Brett Hume today is talking about Rolling Stone. I didn't know anyone over the age of four reads Rolling Stone.
Oh, my God.
You know, as pretentious and condescending as he usually is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, his favorite subject is himself.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we should do with McChrystal, you know, just on a smiling, you know, tongue-in-cheek point. Maybe Obama should say, get dressed up in your uniform and go down to Florida and clean the beaches up. You want to humiliate me? Tag, you're it.
Yeah, really. Really.
All right, Mike, thanks, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, appreciate you checking in, Mike. You know, I wonder if at some future point, and I'm not talking about far distant, I'm talking about within the next decade, if all of these swine who have worked so hard to destroy this country, people in media like Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these pigs, people in the military-industrial complex, people in government like Cheney, if the pig is still alive, all of these people, I wonder if the time will ever come, and I know the answer to this, where they would have to face a tribunal, not as heavy-duty as Nuremberg, but a tribunal of American justice, because every one of these pigs, except the media pigs, took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, the military and the civilian leaders. The pigs in media should be treated as such. They should just, I don't know, they should be, if this glorious getting up morning should ever come, where people would be held accountable for their part in destroying the fabric of the society, they should be treated like the punks that they are. Limbaugh is nobody. He's some pig that makes $50 million a year. I get emails from people that say, you don't make as much money as Rush. Oh, wow, that's really important, you dumbass. Beck is nothing but somebody who is clinically nuts. He's just insane and has great fun moving the pieces around inside his head and watching, you know, trying to wipe the spittle and the drool up. And Hannity is nothing more than Rush Limbaugh's little butt boy. Hannity gets his marching orders. You listen, if you can handle it, listen to the pig man someday from noon to three Eastern, and then listen to Hannity, the twit. When's he on, from 3 to 6? Exactly the same thing. These people make me sick. They really do. Blake is in Los Angeles. Hey, Blake.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Hey, okay, I'm getting some echo. Anyway, I'm an Afghan vet. I was infantry in Afghanistan in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it kind of drives me nuts how the media is jumping on this little sideshow of, oh, General McChrystal said bad things about President Obama, and not focusing on the core of the issue at all. They just completely forget about it. And that is essentially that Obama's strategy in Afghanistan is destined to fail. And it's because I think, in essence, the general public, American public, sees Afghanistan through the eyes of the nation state.
Right.
And it's not a nation. It's a group of city states separated by these huge expanses of nothingness. And, like, you don't know middle of nowhere until you've been to Afghanistan.
Right.
And, you know, I have a story that I think just sums it up, and I think listeners can put two to two together and figure out why it's not going to work, nation
okay.
building. There was a platoon from my company.
Well, one question. Blake, do you have me on speakerphone?
No, I don't. I'm on my cell phone.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. There was a platoon from my company that went out on a mission in the middle of nowhere. And they came upon a tiny village, as there are a few out in the vast expanses of nothingness, about 50 people. And the elder from the village comes up, and the platoon leader greets him, and the elder asks, "Who are you guys?"
Mm-hmm.
And the platoon leader says, "Well, we're Americans." And he says, "Where's America?"
Mm-hmm.
And so he explains that to him. And then he goes, "Well, why are you guys here?"
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Well, we're here to get rid of the Taliban." And he says, "Who's the Taliban?" And and they explain that to him. And then the elder says, "Well, whatever happened to the Russians?" And that's 2003.
Yeah.
And that's what the majority of the country is. You know, Karzai and his cronies run a couple of cities here and there.
Right.
The Taliban, which a lot of people in America think they're some terrorist group, they're not.
Right.
They're the ethnic majority of the southern portion of the country. And they run a couple of cities or spots and cities here and there. And the rest of the country is run by what we call warlords, which are really just mobsters. It's like little Al Capones basically running their own little territories all around the rest of the country. Probably 80% of the country is run like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold no allegiance to anybody. So, you know, it doesn't matter what we do over there.
No, I certainly agree. What was the attitude of the people in your company while you were there?
Well, I was there, you know, not at the beginning, but not far off.
Right, right.
And we would still drive down the street and, you know, get yells of thank you and, you know, in Iraq, it wasn't, you know, as pleasant, I'll just say that. But in Afghanistan, you know, we spent most of our time helping people back then. You know, as an infantryman, that was amazing. You know, I spent more time in the med station than I did behind the gun.
Right.
But, yeah, from what I hear from buddies that have gone back, it's basically Iraq light now, but worse because of the terrain.
Mm-hmm. Well, it, your point is, I think, anyone who has either been there, as you have, or who has studied the history of that country, to the slight degree that I have, understands that your point is right on. There is no way that some invading force, going all the way back to Alexander the Great, is going to subdue or take over or change this tribal society. It's just not going to happen, period. End of story. And the sad part is, in my generation, it was Vietnam. It was very clear early on, back in like 63, 64, after the Viet Minh, they were called then, overthrew the French. Overthrew the French, for God's sake, at Dien Bien Phu, and executed, I forget the exact number of French soldiers. And the French said, to hell with this, and left. And then what happened? We moved in. I'm not suggesting that happened in 63 and 64. By then, we already had a military presence there. But the whole idea behind the invasion of Vietnam was to stop communism, just like the whole idea behind the invasion of Afghanistan is to stop terrorism. This is madness. This is insanity. And you have to wonder, Blake, why generation after generation people don't understand this. Counterinsurgency is a failed prospect. It cannot work. Ask the French where it concerns not just Vietnam, but ask them where it concerns Algeria. And they will tell you right to your face, Jesus God, you better get out of Afghanistan. Ask the Russians. Ask the British. You know? Blake.
Exactly. And, you know, if I could say one last thing.
All right, quickly. 10 seconds.
Okay. You know, every day a mother or a wife gets a chaplain or a letter telling them that their loved one is dead.
That's right.
That's what the media forgets.
That's right. Thank you, Blake. I appreciate what you had to say.
Take what's there.
with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Michael writes in, Jeremy's wrong. The caller Jeremy said it was an accident. Jeremy's wrong. His mother insisted that the family members get to see the body, and there were three shots to his forehead that could be covered by a half dollar. He was shot by friendly fire, period. If he died in a rollover, there would have been no need for a cover story. From thinking, Obama hired McChrystal to carry out his policy not to go berserk to a reporter or talk to one while drunk. If General McChrystal is bipolar, this is a matter of national security. He needs to have a different post, not that one. He should have known better than to gossip to a reporter. McChrystal should have quit to do some other role if he had a problem with his commander-in-chief rather than pontificate while employed to serve him. It's fine to be a critic of someone you're not working for or if you're retired. General Odom didn't get up and attack Reagan while a general. He did criticize the government later while a retired general. Patton didn't attack his superior officers or the president, but he was certainly colorful. McChrystal sounds unstable. If he has to apologize for what he said, one has to wonder if he was either unstable, drunk, stupid, or tricked by a reporter into thinking he was off the record. I doubt he was tricked, so what's left? Stupidity? The decision Obama faces in this instance regarding McChrystal has nothing to do, as far as I'm concerned, with disagreeing with McChrystal's policies. It has to do with discipline, stability, and decorum, what any employer should expect of those working for him. Would McChrystal tolerate a soldier under his command trashing McChrystal to Rolling Stone and simply accept an apology? Or would he send him to a different post and get him out of his own office? Keep McChrystal doing what he's best at, but not running Afghanistan in a role involving publicly representing the USA and the president, since he has so much contempt for Obama and has no common sense, nor does McChrystal's own staff. From Tom in Daytona, Mike, I served on active duty in the past as an officer. The McChrystal situation brings two common military phrases to mind. The first one, I really sandbag so-and-so. The second one, make it not smell, make it go away. Why is it that the top brass are not protecting the president from this affair playing out in the press? Because Gates and Petraeus are sandbagging Obama. What McChrystal did was totally unacceptable. It appears he's an alcoholic. The military counseling service definition of alcoholism is that if it affects your job, you're an alcoholic. The proper protocol in the military is immediate dismissal from duties. To wit, make it not smell, make it go away. Obama should have ordered Petraeus to fire McChrystal immediately and not get involved. Gates and Petraeus should have recommended this. The president should have given Petraeus an order to take full responsibility for McChrystal's dismissal for insubordination and alcohol counseling and not even involve the president. Now the president appears weak as he is not acting decisively as commander-in-chief but dragging this thing out. Petraeus and Gates are manipulating the situation to sabotage Obama. The real issue is the war is hopelessly and irretrievably lost. The outcome is inevitable. U.S. withdrawal. The situation is being manipulated to make it all Obama's fault. Well, he gets no sympathy from me. He should have gotten rid of Gates from the beginning. He should not have escalated the war, but sought a way out. Every time Obama makes a statement about withdrawal from Iraq or Afghanistan, Gates and sometimes other general officers issue a correction or qualifying statement. Who's in charge, really? Obama obviously made a deal with the devil to keep the defense contractors in the money with a new wider war in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Now he will go down with that promise as Gates and Petraeus have their cover story to sell to Limbaugh and company on how the war was lost. Tom in Daytona. Just never stops, does it? McChrystal meth. Rick in San Francisco writes, I was listening to Con Hallinan on another show, and he said basically Petraeus and McChrystal think in the long term, and their interests in the long term, and for McChrystal in particular, the long term does not look good in Afghanistan. Rolling Stone has given the general the parachute he needs to bail on his failing Afghan campaign. If he is fired, dollars to donuts in a year or so, he'll be saying he was fired because the administration lost its nerve. I want to puke. Rick in San Francisco. Ay, it just never stops. Never, 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 never. Let's see if I can get this in real quick before the break. William writes, Mike, sorry to disagree with your opinion, but I heard the best solution from a caller on Randy Rhoads' show. The answer is to bust him down to private, McChrystal. Well, I don't think you can do that. Wasn't he the leader of the assassin squad, McChrystal? Wasn't he Dick Cheney's mole? I thought Obama was forced to take this guy. If the man cannot follow orders, he should be busted down. He's not a leader if he cannot follow the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Still a great show, and I do respect your opinion, William, software diplomat. I don't think you can bust. You can ask for resignation, but you can't bust a four-star general down to private. I don't think you can bust him down to anything. I don't think you can take away a star. The stars are granted by Congress, not the president. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jacket and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
You'll see him in your nightmares. You'll see him in your dreams.
Welcome back. It's 25 before the hour. Blue is calling back in Toowoomba, Australia. Hey, Blue. Where's Blue? Hello? Let me put it on hold. Kathy, see if you can fix it up. Keith is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, Keith. Okay. Do we have a phone problem, Kathy? Okay, Keith couldn't hear me either. Let me try Blue one more time. Can you hear me, Blue? Okay, we have a phone problem. I don't know what's going on here, but it's not coming through. Damn. All right, Kathy will work on it. And don't if you're on hold, don't hang up. It's just some kind of a connection problem, I'm sure. Right? Okay. An email while we're waiting here. Bruce in Pennsylvania writes, Mike, I don't know if you're correct about the solution to the McChrystal issue or not. I'm not smart enough to know the answer. However, if the Rolling Stone article is correct, then the situation may have a layer that is not being considered. Namely, that McChrystal is loyal to the previous regime and ultimately the right wing. According to the following paragraph from the Rolling Stone article, McChrystal's strategy is a lot like that used in Vietnam. To quote from the article, when it comes to Afghanistan, history is not on McChrystal's side. The only foreign invader to have any success here was Genghis Khan. And he wasn't hampered by things like human rights, economic development, and press scrutiny. The counterinsurgency doctrine, bizarrely, draws inspiration from some of the biggest Western military embarrassments in recent history. France's nasty war in Algeria, lost in 1962, and the American misadventure in Vietnam, lost in 1975. McChrystal, like other advocates of counterinsurgency, readily acknowledges that counterinsurgency campaigns are inherently messy, expensive, and easy to lose. McChrystal says, quote, even Afghans are confused by Afghanistan. But even if he somehow manages to succeed after years of bloody fighting with Afghan kids who pose no threat to the U.S. homeland, the war will do little to shut down Al-Qaeda, which has shifted its operation to Pakistan. Dispatching 150,000 troops to build new schools, roads, mosques, and water treatment facilities around Kandahar is like trying to stop the drug war in Mexico by occupying Arkansas and building Baptist churches in Little Rock. It's all very cynical politically, says Mark Sageman, a former CIA case officer who has extensive experience in the region. Afghanistan is not in our vital interest. There's nothing for us there. End quote from the Rolling Stone article. My point here, Bruce writes, is that McChrystal is tying Obama to a policy that is a failure. By doing so, the dogs of war will be loosed should a right-winger regain the White House, and the left will be silenced by the failure of what will be considered their counterinsurgency strategy, which is basically what McChrystal has been recommending to Obama. Nice dilemma, huh? Use counterinsurgency with all of its drawbacks and run the risk of forever being tagged as a party of failed military endeavors who are always trying to fight nice. This really gives the right wing the ability to claim that the idealism of the left is ineffective and ultimately puts the lives of our soldiers in jeopardy. It further gives the right the ability to absolve itself of their behavior in Vietnam and further tags the left as failures when it comes to military endeavors. What a boon to the revisionist historians this would be. On the other hand, if Obama fires McChrystal, then he will face all the criticism from the right that you have already mentioned. So what to do? Use McChrystal's tacit admission of failure to get the hell out of Afghanistan. Bruce in Pennsylvania. Ay, 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 ay. Let's try the phones again, see if they're working. Keith. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's Kathy's talking to Keith. Rob in San Francisco. Oops. Keith is in L.A. Keith, can you hear me? Hello, Keith. All right, we're just going to drop the phone calls. I can't sit here and keep doing this, Kathy, so just let it go. I don't know exactly, or even remotely, what's going to happen at this meeting tomorrow, to which Stanley McChrystal has been summoned by Obama, all the way from Afghanistan. McChrystal obviously is in the States right now, in Washington. That's a hell of a trip coming from Afghanistan. There's no telling what might happen or what would be the outcome of this meeting between Obama and McChrystal.
Welcome.
But I will guarantee you one thing, that at this point, just about whatever Obama does, the right-wing crazy bastards in this country, starting with the thugs in media, the usual gang of chicken hawks, cowards, and bastards, will use whatever decision is made to attack and continue to try to crucify Obama, because Obama is a black man from Kenya and has no business, and a Democrat, and has no business being in the Oval Office. Oh, and also, even though he is a center-right president, he is not fascist. He may appear to be to some of us on the left, but not really. Not really. And keep in mind that the basis for the right-wing criticism of Barack Obama is not his politics. The basis for right-wing criticism is his race. It's that simple. Don't kid yourself for a moment, truth seeker. Please. I mean, do anything you want, but don't kid yourself on the race issue. That's what the whole teabag movement is about. It's the pimple that erupted on the ass of the Republican Party and became a huge separating boil that has now burst onto the political scene. The racism that the Republican Party, for the most part, has tried to be so coy and cute about, with terms like, oh, well, it's called the Southern Strategy, or urban problems are besetting our country, or, well, it's those illegal immigrants. The basis of the Republican Party is and has been racism. And the teabag freaks were given life and juice and sustenance by the Republican Party to get out there and say what people like John Boehner don't dare say. People like Sarah Palin don't dare say. People like Michelle Bachmann don't dare say. These are all racists. These are all thugs. These are all America haters, every single one of them. But the basis of this opposition against Barack Obama is purely and simply racial. You know it. I know. I don't know why we keep beating around the bush about this. I really don't. And for the upper echelon of these war lovers like McChrystal to be taking orders from a 40-something-year-old black man back in the United States is beyond endurance. It cannot be tolerated. And you know this as well as I do. Racism is one of the unyielding hallmarks of American society. Oh, according to Ben Smith, writing at Politico, the mother of Pat Tillman, the Army Ranger, gave up his NFL career, yada, yada. The mother of Pat Tillman sought to warn President Obama against making General Stanley McChrystal his commander in Afghanistan. Not her son's, but Obama's commander. This is according to Politico.com. Mary Tillman said in an unpublished interview this year that she wrote to Obama and called senators and members of Congress trying to block McChrystal's appointment when she learned that he was under consideration for the post. She called the lack of deliberation leading to his appointment disgusting. And the interview was given before today's Rolling Stone article spurred intense tension between the generals and the general and the White House. An audio recording of the interview was provided to Politico by the person who conducted the interview, who asked to remain anonymous. McChrystal has been accused of involvement in covering up the fact that Tillman had been shot by his own comrades and having approved a citation for a posthumous medal that attributed his death to, quote, enemy fire, though the general also penned a memo warning the White House against describing the circumstances of Tillman's death for fear of future embarrassment. Mary Tillman said she emailed Obama a short letter saying that McChrystal was not what he seemed. She received no response to the letter. Before the hour, apparently we have some major phone problems in here, so you think it's working yet? Try it. Perez.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Perez. And
sorry about your phone problems there, buddy, but sorry about your phone problems,
yeah.
But it worked out good for me.
Okay, you can hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just fine.
All right,
thanks,
Perez.
Mike. Thanks, Kathy, also.
Sure.
I wanted to mention just two quick points I think were underreported and not reported at all. The Supreme Court, now you have to actually actively say you're going to be silent. That's going to be turned around and perverted by the cops so much it's going to be the cops' word against yours. This is really revolting development.
You're talking about the Miranda ruling where you have to ask for your rights.
Yeah, you have to ask instead of it's the opposite of the Constitution. What's not spelled out, you retain. Your rights are retained as an individual.
Right.
Complete opposite to the spirit of the Constitution that they always brag about.
Well, you know, it shouldn't be surprising. Remember, this is a Supreme Court that Democrats allowed to materialize.
It was, exactly.
There were Democrats who confirmed Alito. Democrats who confirmed Roberts.
Yeah.
Democrats who allowed this to happen. So, you know, you can't blame, and I know you're not, one cannot blame Bush for nominating those whom he was told to nominate, who were all fascists. That's what Bush was told to do. What we can blame, though, are these filthy damn Democrats in the Senate who confirmed these two bastards.
Exactly. And, you know, I called every senator that week, and I called my own Boxster and Pigstein. I called them at least once or twice a day, begged them. And they were saving their filibuster, remember?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they were saving it for what? For what? And also, another story, there was three candidates running for office in Arizona, and they have that one of those public finance campaign laws.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court ruled that they refused to allow these three candidates to get matching public funds.
Right.
I'm telling you, man, they're doing it on every single front. And I think about what happened to old Tony Bugliosi, man. Vincenzo, I guess no district attorney in this entire country had the balls to do what he wanted them to do. Just one is all it would take, man.
Yeah. Well, that's simply not going to happen, Perez.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pipe dream to think it will. Listen, I got to move on because I had to drop people and a couple of them are back. Thanks, Perez. Always good to hear from you. You want to try Blue in Toowoomba, Australia? Hey, Blue.
Yeah, I know we're short on time. Mike, I just want to say a couple of things.
Sure.
We're back in Toowoomba. We cut our holiday short. But, you know, this Drongo McChrystal had Pat Tillman murdered because Tillman was going to be talking to, what was his name, Ted Koppel.
Uh-huh.
About what was really going on in Afghanistan. Of course, this is the point that's being missed. It's not tactics. It's the point. The point is that the United States has no business being in Afghanistan in the first place.
Right.
It's not about tactics and whether you can win the hearts and minds of the bloody people. And secondly, I'd like to send a personal message out there to Julian Assange, or whatever his name is. I don't know the man or what his name is. But the guy from WikiLeaks.
Oh, yeah.
Good on you, mate. I hope you live to be 115 years old and have 15 grandchildren.
Yeah.
And these bloody bastards that are out there looking for you. You know, die horrible deaths. Kath said something about the fact you're trying to get in touch with him.
Yes.
The last that I heard, he was in hiding, according to Daniel Ellsberg, who's something of a hero himself.
Well, he attended a conference recently, I think in Belgium. He's I don't think he's in hiding now, Blue. But whether or not we can get a hold of him is something else again.
Well, in any case, I'm going to be going to South Africa next week, and maybe I'll call you from there.
Sounds good. Take care.
Okay.
All right. See you later. You know, it's very true, of course. Blue simply represents how many people around the globe outside the United States who are of the absolute conviction, like a lot of us in this country are, that we have no business being in Afghanistan, especially not now. I guess an argument could be made that when we invaded Afghanistan, ostensibly to track down Osama bin Laden, that there might have been some merit to that, and that's debatable. But the truth is, nobody ever gave a damn about Osama bin Laden. He was not the objective. The objective was the pipeline in Afghanistan. And then once we had troops in that area switching from Afghanistan to steal the oil in Iraq or set it up so that the international oil companies could steal it, became very easy to do. Again, all those demonstrations in this country back in 02 and early 03, no blood for oil, no blood for oil. Just on and on. All of it ignored. All of it just, you know, the idea of no war was just spat upon by the Bush administration. Obama had an opportunity. He had a clear opportunity to, during the campaign, I'm not talking about when he was president. I'm talking about during the campaign. He had a clear opportunity to state to the American people, we have no business in either one of these countries. No business at all. And if I'm elected president, I'll make sure we get out. But he didn't. And the reason he didn't is because Obama is a center-right president who is going to do exactly what the foreign policy military establishment in this country wants. End of story. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
American people.